I'm like, Jack, I'm going to put my watch up here. It doesn't mean a thing. Because I really do forget to look at, but at least I'm looking at a starting time, and I usually forget to do that. So this is good news. Wow, look. Isn't this amazing? I heard Dr. Paul say one time that wouldn't it be wonderful if we could awake each morning in awe? I am in awe today. I am humbled to have been asked to be with you this weekend. My name is Stephanie Butler, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi, everybody. And I would like to give you a sobriety date, but I didn't drink hard and long enough to do that. So I'm going to give you a date that I made a commitment to work the Al-Anon program to the best of my ability. And that date is July the 24th of 1985. Yay, program. I know. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. If you ask my family, that's what they'd say. I would like to thank Harlan. You know, might be one of the most generous men I've ever met. Yeah. And the committee, the goodie bag and the beautiful room and the dinners. It's just been, it's been wonderful. And the best is yet to come, like Jack and Sarah. And now the best, you know. They were great. We've got a little dip here, and then we're going to go skyrocket. But I, and then Chris, the first Chris called and affirmed my invitation, and then was picked up at the airport yesterday by sweet Chris, who's so willing to be of service, whatever I need, you know. And even tonight after dinner, she said, "Have you seen the ocean yet?" And she knows that's a love of mine. And we said no, and she says, "Well, then we'll just take a quick left and we'll take you there." So we got to drive by the ocean. Now, I am from Granite Shoals, Texas. I need to tell you, I have a home group. And the home group is ODAT. We meet Monday night at 7:30. It's a wonderful Al-Anon meeting. If you'd like to come, we'd love to have you. And Granite Shoals is about an hour and a half west of Austin and about an hour and a half north of San Antonio. So when y'all come for that international in 2010, yeah, stop by my house. I'd love to have you. But it's a little bitty town, and for me to come from there to here, this is like a miracle. I know today that I have a loving God that works in my life, and I hope that I can share that with you this evening. The Al-Anon literature suggests that we share with you how sick we get, how well we are, and what helped us to get well, with the emphasis being on what helped us to get well. So that's what I'm going to try to do. I was born the oldest of three into a Catholic Italian family. Pretty sick right there. You know, just being born. But then the day I was born, that's the special part. Because I was born on Christmas Eve. Oh yeah, me and Jesus. And I always felt kind of special. You know, and I was born first, and so it was just like the celebration for all of us. And I was 64 this last Christmas Eve, and I am telling you, I am so grateful to be second ear today. I feel very grateful for that. Now, when I was born in Midland, Texas. And shortly after I was born, my family moved to San Antonio, and that's where I grew up. In doing my four-step, I went back to find out where the dysfunction in my family came from, because my mom and dad were social drinkers. They were not alcoholic. There was very little alcohol in our home. Because we were Italian, we had wine at dinner periodically, but there wasn't a drinking problem in my family of origin. So I went back to see, where is the dysfunction? Well, my dad was a workaholic. He held down three jobs while I was growing up. So he might have been present or not present, but emotionally completely unavailable. My mother was raised one of eight children. And I'll just give you my observation. She had several siblings that had drinking problems. And her dad was a bootlegger. And so I believe that my mama was raised in an alcoholic home, and I believe she was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. Now, you you'll hear a lot of people say when they see somebody that's hanging out with an alcoholic, say, she must be an Al-Anon. Well, she is an Al-Anon if she goes to meetings, gets a sponsor, reads the literature, and works the steps. If she just hangs out with an alcoholic and it gets on her, she's an untreated Al-Anon. So I believe that I was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. So now I have to tell you, looking at this family, I had to look at some of the beliefs that I grew up with. And one of them was, if you do good, you will get good. So Sarah said she wasn't interested in perfection. I am, and I was, and I was just going to do it right. I had to color inside the lines. I had to be the best little girl I could possibly be because I was scared to death. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if it was fear put in me by listening at church or if it was my mom and dad or where that belief or that thought came from, but I was scared to death to make a mistake. The other thing that happened when I was growing up was that I would look at you and you looked so put together and I felt so less than. So I was in the process of judging constantly. You've got it, I don't. I feel less than. And then these feelings that we have been asked to learn to identify once we become a member in the program, they were never expressed or validated in my home. It was never okay to be angry. It was never okay to be sad or scared or lonely. In fact, I will tell you that I saw my mama get mad at my daddy one time in the 18 years that I lived at home. She cried, walked out, slammed the door, got in the car, and drove off. So the lesson I learned was, if you make somebody angry, they're going to leave. So my people-pleasing is put there at a very, very early age. Don't want any anger, don't want any confrontation, because I don't want you to go away. The other thing, and I loved it when Jack said it this evening, we had a sign in our front yard, and the sign said, "We are fine, thank you very much. There is nothing wrong in this house, we are fine. Yes, we are fine." And that's how we walked around. We were always fine. I really don't remember ever saying to my mama, "I'm scared," and having her say, you know. And I remember after I got in the program and our son, we asked him to take out the trash and he slammed the door and I stomped around and I looked at him and I said, "There's no need to be sad or be angry." And then I thought, wait, the program would teach me to say, "I can see that you're angry and it's okay to be angry and now I need for you to take out the trash." You know, validate the feeling. Just validate it. It doesn't make any difference what it is. It's okay, it's your feeling. So that's the family that I grew up in. When I was a senior in high school, I met the man that I was going to marry. His name is Bill. And we dated for 4.5 years, and we went to college and graduated, and then we were married. And when we were married, we moved to Austin, Texas, and that's where we began our family. And I was a school teacher, and I love teaching school. It is in my blood. I was born to be a teacher. And Bill had a job he loved. And so, you know, and there wasn't any real evidence of drinking at this time, although in Bill's job, he would travel some. And he would call and say, "Man, we just had happy hour. It was the greatest thing. I really had a good time." Or he'd say, "You know, flying on the plane, they're giving free drinks. I'm telling you, this is so good." And then beer started to show up in the refrigerator at our house. Now, in my family, we didn't have beers in the refrigerator, so I started to pay attention. But, you know, just kind of keeping an eye out. It's what we have to do here. And so after we had been married for 3 years, I became pregnant. And I need to tell you a little story. In July of 1969, my Catholic Italian cousin was getting married. And it was a glorious Saturday morning. So Bill and I left Austin and drove to San Antonio for this wedding. And we were, I'm telling you, it was beautiful, and the wind and the everything. It was a beautiful morning. And they had the reception, and the champagne was flowing, and everybody's having a very good time. And then my cousin and his new bride were going to fly to Hawaii for their honeymoon. So we all go out to the airport to wish them well. And as we're standing at the airport, I had different relatives come up to me and say, "Your husband is the funniest thing. I have really enjoyed visiting with Bill." On, okay. And then somebody else would come up and say, "You know, Bill has just kept us in stitches. What a great sense of humor. He's the funniest thing." Okay. Now, the reason I was a little suspicious was because Bill was raised as an only child by a single mom. And when you put him in these Catholic Italian gatherings, he was not a happy camper. And so for him to be entertaining my relatives, the picture was just kind of strange to me. So while we're standing there, Bill comes up and he says, "I'll be back in just a minute." And I said, "Okay." So we wave goodbye to the newlyweds and, you know, they're leaving. And then we get ready to leave the airport and we can't find Bill. We have him paged. We go up and down the ramps. We go out to the car. There's no Bill. So finally, my brother-in-law comes up and he said, "I found your husband." And I said, "You did?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "He's passed out in the men's room." And I went, "Oh, my goodness." So we had to get an airport attendant to take the door off the hinges. We had to get a wheelchair. I had to pull his britches up, fasten those britches, and we put him in that wheelchair. And as we're walking out, Butler's sliding out. We're shoving him back in again. And my brother-in-law said, "I'll push the wheelchair." I said, "Oh, no, no, he's my husband. I can push this wheelchair." So, 8 months pregnant, pushing the wheelchair, Butler sliding out, we're shoving him back, we're going down the ramps. My mother is walking along beside me, and she is saying, "I cannot believe that my son-in-law is drunk." I said, "Oh, Mama, don't say that. Bless his little heart." If you ever hear me say, "Bless his little heart," I am having an Al-Anon slip. I said, "Mama, he's not drunk. He's just sick. Bless his little heart." And we're walking out, and my mother's saying, "I can't believe my son-in-law's drunk." I said, "Mama, please, he's not drunk." Now, the reason I am telling you that story is because 19 years later, I was sitting in a psychiatrist's office, and I was saying, "Do you think he could have a brain tumor? I'm pretty sure it's a brain tumor. Let's operate on that sucker, pull it out, and let us get on with the rest of our lives." You know, the denial that keeps us in this insidious disease for so, that's the day it got implanted in me. "He is not drunk, he's just sick." I wish I had a dollar for every time I said that. So 1 month later, this beautiful little baby girl is born. Her name is Laura Janice. And all I've ever wanted to do was to be a mommy. I got to have my profession and teach, and now I got to be a mommy. And 21 months later, our son Wes is born. Now, this is perfect. I have the man I love. I have two healthy children, thank you, God. And I get to be a stay-at-home mom with these kiddos. And so I'm just, you know, we're playing and we're having a really good time, and Bill's drinking a little bit more. So I'm paying a little bit more attention to that, and I'm watching it. Now, I need to tell you that my idea of love is enmeshment. If you love somebody, you spend time with them. So every time Bill Butler went hunting, we all went hunting. Every time Bill Butler went fishing, we all went fishing. Every time he went bowling, we all went bowling. In retrospect, you probably would have needed to take a drink yourself. Yeah. But the good news is Laura can skin a deer faster than anybody you ever saw. But I kept thinking, if we spend time together and we're together, we love each other. Because, see, these children were growing up. They weren't needing me as much. Bill was drinking more, and I was watching that. And I didn't know how to get my inside filled up. So I started doing outside things. I was PTA president. I was a Brownie Scout leader. I was a member of a service organization. I built a playscape. I was doing all that outside stuff to fill up the inside. And it just wasn't working. I was just really tired. And I do need to tell you that we had a puppy. I have to tell you this story about Flopsy. Great border collie. Just the greatest dog. And Flopsy gets pregnant. And so she's about to have puppies. And we've never experienced this in our family before. So I decided that I wanted to shampoo her so she would look pretty for delivery day. I had nothing else to do. And so I shampooed Flopsy, and then I remembered sometimes you watch dogs and they run to dry, and sometimes you towel them dry. And I wanted to do it right. So I read on the bottle, and it said, "Do not use on pregnant dogs." So I called our vet, and I said, "Dr. Paget, what have I done? I used this shampoo on Flopsy, have I killed these puppies? And he said, well, it's going to be a couple of weeks yet before they're born. Let's just wait and see. And so sure enough, about 2 weeks later, the first puppy was born, and it was born dead. And I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, Dr. Pigott, I have killed these puppies. And he said, there's a lot of puppies. Let's wait and see. And sure enough, about an hour later, one was born, and it was healthy, and it was alive. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, Dr. Pigott, I didn't kill all of them. We have a healthy, alive puppy. And he said, I'm really happy for you, Stephanie. And about a half an hour later, another puppy was born. So I called Dr. Pigott. Well, you see, this puppy was healthy too, and I needed to tell Dr. Pigott. And so over the course of the day, Flopsy had seven puppies. I called Dr. Pigott after every puppy. You know, it was that responsible. You know, I was feeling so responsible that I had killed him, but now I've saved him, and so I had to share it. Well, the seventh puppy was born and had trouble breathing. So I called Dr. Pigott. What do I do? And he said, do you have any whiskey in your home? Yes. And he said, well, put a little whiskey in a teaspoon and put that and let it go down the puppy's throat, and it will break up all that phlegm, and I think the puppy will be okay. And I said, okay, I think I can do that. And he said, and then, Stephanie, I want you to sit down and drink the rest of that bottle. That is a true story. And I want you to know, I was so tired. If I could have, I would have. You know, I've been trying to get these kids to look good because, of course, their behavior is such a reflection on me. I've been trying to get these puppies born. I've been trying to make Bill Butler happy so he doesn't drink quite so much, because I was sure that that was my responsibility. And so I was really tired. And our daughter, well, I love her. And she was born angry. And she will tell you that. She said, I just came out of the chute angry. And so she was breaking a rule. I don't care what rule it was. Laura broke it. I think she broke every one of them. And we didn't like this. You know, she was really, in fact, she was the one standing on top of our house going, the sign says we're fine. We are dying inside. Somebody come help us. These people are crazy. And I was not happy with her behavior because it certainly wasn't a very good reflection on me as a parent and her mom. So we took her to a psychologist, and we said, would you please fix her? And so he said, well, I need to meet with each one of you. So he met with me, and then he met with Bill, and then he met with Laura. Then he brought the three of us back together, and he said, I need to tell you that of the three of you, your daughter is the healthiest. So that little girl goes, yes, you know. Bill didn't want to pay the bill. And he sat with us, and he said, I see that you're crying, and that's all I ever did was cry. And he said, you're crying all the time. He looked at Bill, and he said, and it looks to me like you're drinking a lot. And he looked over at Laura, and he said, you know what? You're expressing your feelings. You're doing it inappropriately, but we know how you feel. And, you know, that was a part of my disease. I couldn't get angry. I couldn't express myself. I was afraid of anger, so I cried. You know, Bill would do something, and it wouldn't be nice, and the worst I could do would be to stick my tongue out at him. I can't tell you how many times he walked out of the room, and I went, because I could not say, I feel angry. I just cried. I cried all the time. The kids would come in and say, Mom, what's the matter? And I'd say, nothing. And so their message is, Mom cries when nothing's wrong. I cried all the time. Well, in the spring of 1985, Laura had to have jaw surgery. She's in high school, and she is beautiful when you look at her from the front, but she had a very protruding chin. So they had to go in and break that jawbone and scoot it back and then wire her mouth shut. I love that part. She had a mouth. Anyway, so we're getting ready for the surgery, and I am in the hospital room with Laura, and I have my first moment of clarity. Our daughter is going in for major surgery, and Bill's not there. And I thought, I am doing this marriage and this family all by myself. And I started to pay attention. He was at home, passed out. That's what Bill did. He drank at home and he would pass out. And in July of 1985, he came in one day and he said, "What's for dinner?" And I told him, and about 5 minutes later, he came in and asked the same question. That's when I thought he had the brain tumor. And, you know, but there were things like that. You want to go to a movie? I'd love to. I'd get the dishes all clean, and he'd be passed out. And I was watching him drink. And he had a chair that he sat in, and he just got puffier and puffier. And he really, I knew he was drinking himself to death. I knew that man was going to die. And my heart was breaking, and I thought, I can't watch it. I love him too much. And so I said, "You either have to get out or get sober, because I can't watch you." And he was so mad at me. He said, "I'm leaving, but you'd leave too if you had to live with you." And I thought, you know, I don't care why you're leaving. We just can't live like this anymore. I didn't know that something had to change, but I knew I couldn't watch that anymore. And he left. And so that was on a Saturday. The next Monday, this guy from his work called and said, "Stephanie, understand you kicked Bill out." And I said, "You know, I need to tell you that I love him, but I think he's dying." I said, "He does nothing but drink, and I'm afraid he's going to die." And Jerry said, "Well, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to take you to a meeting. Will you go with me?" And I would have gone anywhere. I was really desperate, and I was tired, and I was trying to keep these children in line. You know, Laura was doing all of her acting out, and Wesley's playing every sport he can get into because he's trying to get his insides filled by the outside. But when Jerry offered to take me to a meeting, I said, "You bet, I'll go." And on July the 24th, Jerry took me to my very first Al-Anon meeting. And I sat there and I cried. And I cried. And they'd say, "Your name?" And I'd go, and they'd say, "Well, just keep coming back. Just keep coming back." And you know, I was stunned. I had no idea that alcoholism was a disease. I had no idea. I had been judging this man every day and found him lacking. I had no idea it was a disease. And then when you told me it was a family disease, and when you told me that if you raise children in an alcoholic home, you are raising sick kids, I didn't think I could stand it. And then you said, "But you did the very best you could with the knowledge you had at the time." And I thought, if somebody had told me, I didn't know. And so I started going to Al-Anon meetings. 2 weeks after I asked Bill to leave, he called and he said, "Stephanie, I've been out at Willie's and I've been trying to sober myself up and I can't do it." He said, "I need help." So on August the 6th, Bill entered treatment and he started his spiritual journey. So I'm telling you, all I ever wanted was for him to get sober, because then I knew everything would be fine. Wrong. You know, that the first part of my story, that's pretty boring. Hang on, because I'm telling you, it's so funny. I really did. I thought, you know, you sober that man up and we've got it made. And he's going to meetings and I'm going to meetings and he's saying, "We talked about acceptance. What'd you talk about?" And I said, you know, this 11th step or detachment. And we had a new communication and it was wonderful. I had the man that I had married, and I was so happy. And y'all told me to get a sponsor, and I did, by golly. I found a woman that had been in Al-Anon for 22 years, and I wanted what she had. Her name is Blanche. And I am telling you, Blanche was the first person that ever looked at me, touched my face, and said, "It's okay to be who you are and to feel the way you feel." And then as we would meet, we met every week for an hour until we were through with the ninth step. And as we're meeting and sharing, she says to me, "We're going to have to change your concept of a higher power. I think you've got a God you're afraid of." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I want to tell you that God cannot do bad. God loves you. He only wants good in your life." And as I sat in the meetings, and as I was listening to Blanche and reading the literature, my idea of a higher power shifted. I went from this God that was going to judge me and punish me to a God that said, I love you and I want the best for you. And I went to Al-Anon meetings and I loved it. And I cried every meeting for a year. Every meeting for a year. So after a while, I went to Blanche and I said, Blanche, why am I crying? Bill's sober. And she said, you are grieving the loss of a dream. And I was. I never intended for our family to be held in the grips of alcoholism. But boy, I went to those meetings and I read the literature and I met with Blanche. And I began a road of recovery. And I am thrilled. And Bill has a sponsor. What a great man. Lon. Well, everything's going along pretty good except for this one little problem. Her name is Laura. She didn't like a drunk daddy, but she really didn't like a sober daddy. Yeah, he's showing up. And he's paying attention. So, she's a senior in high school. She's got 3 months till graduation. She's broken some rule, I don't know, can't remember, and we grounded her. And after she had been grounded for a week, she came and she said, the University of Texas is playing baseball. Laura loves UT baseball, loves it. And she said, can I go see the game? It was a Sunday afternoon. And she said, I want to go watch the University of Texas play baseball. And Bill and I talked about it, and we said, okay, you can go. Just be home by 6 o'clock. Laura said, you got it. Well, 6 o'clock came and Laura didn't come home. And Laura didn't come home on Monday. And Laura didn't come home on Tuesday. Now, she's a senior in high school with 3 months till graduation. Now, I believe that it is God's will for everybody to graduate from high school. I have gone back to teaching, and teaching is in my blood, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get this kid out of high school, and then I don't care. I mean, we're just going to get her graduated. And so I'm going to school. I'm calling people. I'm saying, what do we do? And Blanche would say, well, pray. and then in the meetings, y'all would say things to me like, what would you be doing if this weren't happening? Hey, it's happening. This is not good. I don't know where she is. We've got to get her through high school. And then one afternoon when I was through teaching school, I went to get in my car, and it was as if I had another moment of clarity. This voice said to me, if what you're doing isn't working, try something different. And I thought, I have been trying to love Laura well. Can't do it. On Friday of that week, the phone rings, and it's Laura. Hey, Mom, I'm going to be home, but you know what? I'm not going to be home in time to see this show on TV, so could you record it for me, please? As if nothing had happened. And I said, Laura, I love you and you can't come home. She said, what? And that anger just exploded. And I said, I love you and you can't come home. I was so peaceful, I couldn't believe it. And she just rants and raves. And I said, I love you. And I hung up the phone. And about that time, Bill walks in the kitchen and he went, hey, what's going on? And I said, Laura called. And he said, where is she? Is she okay? What's going on? I said, but you know what? I told her that she couldn't come home. And he said, Stephanie, do you think that was a good idea? He hadn't been to any Al-Anon meetings. I said, I don't know, but that's what I did. I was so peaceful, I couldn't get over it. You know, you hear in the program all the time, God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. That was such a God moment. And I want you to know, it lasted a moment. A moment. I am at my Al-Anon meeting Saturday morning crying, you won't believe what I did. We've got to go find her. I told her. I was a mess. You know, and y'all, there was this one Al-Anon that said, did you know you could have a good day anyway?
You're kidding.
I mean, I was a mess. I didn't know what to do. Where was she going to stay? We just really wanted to get her out of high school, and now she's not going to get out of high school. And, oh, my gosh, that's a reflection on me. And I'd go to meetings, and y'all would say, did you know right this minute everything's okay? Right this minute everything's okay. I go, okay. But then, Laura's gone, and I am teaching school. I pray constantly. Blanche says to me, did you know that God loves Laura more than you do? Okay. I'm going to hang on to that one. So Bill thinks that Laura has a behavior problem. So he's calling around trying to find a institution that will take this daughter of ours. And I don't know where she is, and I'm teaching school, and Wesley's playing his sports. And so finally, Bill finds a place that will take a teenager who is acting out. And so I found out where she was, and so I called Blanche and said, can I call Laura? Because we found out we could take her to this treatment center, and Blanche said yes. So I called her, and I said, Laura, this is your mom, and I love you, and if you ever want some help, your daddy and I found a place for you to go. What do I have to do? I said, well, daddy and I'll come pick you up tomorrow morning. And we picked Laura up, and we took her to treatment. I cried, of course, the whole way there, because Laura had been living on the street. She had been sleeping under park benches. She had been playing pool and gotten beat up in pool halls. She just looked horrible. It was so sad. And we dropped her off, and I cried all the way home. Of course, I go to my Al-Anon meeting. About 2 days later, the phone rings, and it's Laura. She says, Mom, how would you feel about me telling you that I'm an alcoholic? I said, Laura, any 12-step program you want to latch on to is just fine with me. She said, we've been inventorying my drinking, Mom, and I think I've got a drinking problem. This coming Monday, Laura will celebrate 22 years of sobriety. And that's for the AA and Al-Anon program, that is going to be a celebration for that daughter. And so I am so excited because now I know where she is and she's safe. And so, you know, we go for family week. Don't you just love them? Everybody tells everybody else all their resentments and you have to sit there and listen. And Laura just wasn't very happy with the way things were going. And she got angry and threw a chair up against the wall. And her counselor said, I don't think she's ready to go home yet. You think? And she suggested that Laura go to a halfway house in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And so that's where she went. We flew her up there. And Laura was in that halfway house for 4.5 months. And then she came home. During that time, our daughter graduated by correspondence from high school. Now, all I wanted was for that to happen. That's all I thought we needed to do was get her out of high school. God said, how about if we do that and give her a 12-step program to live the rest of her life by? I would have cut it short. So now Laura's home, and she's, you know, Wes is a senior in high school now. And so I'm holding on, you know, although this is the kid just like his mom. Wasn't going to break a rule no matter what. When Wesley tried to tell us a lie, he couldn't do it. Tops of his ears turned red. I mean, he was just, and he's playing sports, and he's working as hard as he can to play football, and he's doing those two-a-days, and he gets really, really sick, and he ends up in the hospital, and he has viral meningitis. He's in the hospital for 7 days with 104 temperature. The difference in that scene and the scene with Laura was that Bill was with me. And we asked the doctor, Wes is going to be okay, right? And he said, I can't promise you that. And the AAs came and the Al-Anons came. And Bill and I cried together. And I called Blanche. And I said, how dare you? I said, how would a God do this to this boy? He has done nothing but play by the rules. He was kind and gentle and loving. Why would God do this? And Blanche said, God didn't do this, Stephanie. Your son has a disease. God will sustain you no matter what happens. And sure enough, Wes survived the meningitis and went out to play football, and he graduated from high school on time. Thank you very much. So now Wes is a freshman at the University of Texas, and Laura's got a job, and I'm just, you know, Bill and I are going to meetings, and it's just a wonderful time in our lives. And Bill comes home and says, how would you like to move to Reston, Virginia? And I said, why would we do that? And he said, well, you know, I've been traveling a lot during my job, and I'm tired. I'm tired of traveling. And I said, yes, we can move to Reston, Virginia. Because, you know, homes in Austin, Texas in 1990, they just weren't selling. We weren't going anywhere. Yeah, 2 weeks. Our house sold in 2 weeks. The Al-Anons are over and the AAs, and we're cleaning and painting and trying to get the house ready and all this stuff, and I'm just crying. It's all I can do is cry. And so this wonderful AA guy that's a buddy of ours, Tom, came over and he put his arms around me and he said, Stephanie, what is the problem? And I said, I can't go. I told Bill I would go and I love him and I want to go, but I can't go. And he said, why not? And I said, because I can't leave my children and I can't leave my sponsor and I can't leave my gynecologist and I can't leave my grocery store and I can't leave. And he said, Stephanie, you know what you have in Austin, Texas. Why don't you go see what we have in Reston, Virginia? And you know what? They have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. They don't do it right, but they have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. I called Blanche and said, Blanche, you just won't believe what's going on here. She said, what? And I said, I sat in a whole meeting, and they didn't mention God one time. She said, what did you do? I said, I told them how we do it in Texas. She said, maybe you want to stop saying that. I did, and the meetings got all better. And so now Bill and I are so excited because we are having big book studies in our home. Every Wednesday night we have a big book study. It is just fantastic. And the kids will call and go, Mom, and we'll go, yeah, I love you, bye. And it was like a second honeymoon. I'm teaching in a little private school that I love. He's got a job that he loves. I'm telling you, I just think this is great. Now, Blanche told me that I had to get an eye-to-eye sponsor. She said, you and I will stay together forever. You still need to have somebody that you meet with eye-to-eye. And so I got a sponsor up in Virginia. And so then one day the phone rings, and this is Laura. Hey, Mom. Yes, Laura. I have something I need to tell you. Okay, Laura. She said, you know, I found Wes passed out last night. And I said, is he sick? Mom, Wes is drunk. I said, no, Laura, Wes is not drunk. I said, because he saw his daddy nearly die of alcoholism. He saw you lose your home. Wesley would not be drunk. And she said, Mama, I took him to his first AA meeting today. So January the 10th of 1991, Wes began his spiritual journey. So I called Blanche and said, how many miracles does one family get? I kind of think maybe we've used all ours up. You know, and whenever we would come home to Austin, we would hold hands in an open AA meeting, and there the four of us are in recovery. Well, a little while later, the phone rings, and it's Laura. Mom, yes, guess what? What? I'm pregnant. I said, no, you're not. She said, Mom, I'm going to have a baby. I said, no, honey, you're not. She said, Mother, I said, Laura, first we have the wedding and then we have the baby. We did not have a wedding. She said, Mother, I am going to have a baby. I said, no, you're not. She said, okay, Mom, do you want me to have an abortion? I said, no. She said, do you want me to give the baby up for adoption? I said, no. She said, what do you want? I said, I want for you to not be pregnant. Blanche said I was opting for one of my unavailable choices. Well, you know, obviously it was a reflection on me, and I didn't understand what y'all were doing with my daughter. I mean, she had been dating this guy for 4.5 years, but they weren't getting married. But he was sober, she's sober. I kept it a secret. I didn't tell anybody in Virginia. And one Wednesday night after our big book meeting, George and Rita were leaving. I said, Rita, come here, I need to tell you something. She said, what? And I said, it's really bad, really bad. She said, what? And I said, Laura's going to have a baby. And she says, that's bad? And I said, yeah, she's not married. And she said, Stephanie, isn't this a shame? And I said, what? And she said that you have to judge and label everything. Why don't you just say it's what is? It's just what is. On June the 6th of 1992, the most beautiful baby girl you ever saw was born. Her name is Stephanie Grace. I have to tell you that it might be one of the happiest days of my life. And I would have missed it. It just didn't look right. But we are there. Bill's sober and Wes is sober and I'm crying. But it is indeed. I didn't think I could be that happy. And it wasn't a moment of happiness. It lasted. You could not wipe the grin off my face. I would have missed it. Well, I need to tell you a couple of stories about Grace. She was in second grade, and the teacher asked everybody to introduce themselves. Grace stands up and she says, "Hi, my name is Grace. I'm an alcoholic and I've got 7 years of sobriety." It's the only way she had ever heard anybody be introduced. "I'm an alcoholic and this is how, you know." The teacher said, "What did you say?" Grace is her mother's daughter. She put her hands on her little hips and she said, "Did you not hear what I said? I'm an alcoholic." Isn't everybody? I mean, it was. She went to Northland one day and she went up to Gerald at the office and she said, "Gerald, I need to buy a big book." He said, "Okay, Grace." She said, "How much do they cost?" He said, "How much money do you have, Grace?" She held out her little hand and he says, "You know what? I think that's just about how much a big book cost." And Gerald sold Grace her very first big book. But then that little beautiful girl turns around and she says, "Now I need a sponsor." People were ducking. They knew Laura. So, wow, a beautiful granddaughter. Oh, my gosh. And she's going to be 17 in June. Can you believe it? And she is still the love of my life. I cherish Grace. She's had a really rough road, but by golly, I love her. And 1993, I got a call from San Antonio, and they tell me that my daddy had an abdominal aneurysm that ruptured, and he died instantly. I loved my daddy a lot. And I was devastated. But then I thought, as sad as I am that my daddy died, that's how grateful I am for the ninth step. Everything was clean and clear with daddy and me. I loved him as much as I could, and I knew he loved me as much as he could. And now I have to tell you the part of my story that if I could have missed it, I would have. In 1994, February, just wait a minute. In February of 1994, with 8.5 years of sobriety, Bill Butler could not live with his humanness and he committed suicide. I thought I would die if Bill Butler died. I need you to hear two things this evening. One of them is AA works. Bill cherished his sobriety. The second thing I need for you to hear is that depression is an illness, and if it goes untreated, it will kill you. Bill had suffered from depression on and off most of his life. He had been on antidepressants and off of antidepressants, and he had taken himself off of antidepressants. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was to call my children. When I called Laura, she said, "Mama, that can't be true. Daddy loved you too much." And I called Wes, and he said, "Mama, Daddy would never go off and leave you. He loves you too much." It's not about love. It's about a disease that goes untreated. Now, I need to tell you, when I walked in this room, you told me that I would never have to do anything alone again. And I didn't. You held my hand through everything, step by step. I couldn't breathe, and you would say, "Breathe." We had a memorial service for him in Virginia, and then we took him back to Texas, and we had an AA graveside service for him. I was way messed up around that, and so I needed some special help, and I went to see a counselor. And she says to me, "You know, when something happens in your life and your life changes and will never be the same again, in one instant your life changed. You have been traumatized. There is a difference between grief and trauma, and you have been traumatized. It brings a whole bunch of other symptoms with it." I needed so much help. I went and met with Nancy every week, 2 and 3 times a week, because I couldn't do it any other way. The sponsor that I had in Virginia at the time did not know what to do with me. She showed up at my house with a bag full of bagels, and she wouldn't come in. She told whoever answered the door to tell me that she was sorry. But I had been sitting in meetings in Virginia with a wonderful woman. And she called and left a message, and she said, "Please tell Stephanie if she ever needs anything, I'll be here for her." Her name's Dawn. And Dawn held me and let me cry. And I cried and I cried and I cried. You know, I didn't have any idea, which is something people don't believe. They think you should have had a warning, an inkling, something. Bill and I had been out to dinner and to the grocery store the night before. We had kissed each other that morning and told each other we loved each other. The psychiatrist told me that it was an instantaneous decision, and if he had lived through that Monday, he would be alive today. Dawn's held me. I made closure with the other sponsor. It's okay. She doesn't know what to do with somebody that has this. Dawn has known pain, and Dawn held me and helped me heal. And she has continued to do that. I am so grateful for her willingness to share my pain. So the kids kept saying, "Aren't you coming home, Mom? Come on home." And I said, "No, I really have a job that I like, and I'm just going to stay here." And in 1995, both of my children got married. So I'm talking to Nancy, the counselor, saying, "Oh my gosh, this feels like another loss to me." And she said, "When the children your kids' age lose their family unit, they might find it necessary to recreate a family unit quickly. And this may be a practice marriage for your children." And it was. So in 1996, almost 2 years to the day of Bill's death, I walked into my house and I went, "He's not coming home. He's not coming home." It took 2 years for me to get that knowledge from my head to my heart. He's not coming home. I got on the phone that night and I called Laura and said, "I think I'm coming home." So, unbeknownst to me, Bill was a very dependable employee, even in his alcoholism. And as he's working over these years, he puts money into different funds and stuff. And when he died, there's this lump sum of money. And we've never had money. I didn't even know what to do with it. And so when I got ready to leave, the teachers at school said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I don't know, but you know what? I have never lived in a new house. I think I want a new house. And I love water." I didn't even know that about me. I love water. And the other thing is, I haven't seen very many sunsets since I've been in Virginia. The trees are so tall, and I love sunsets. And God said, okay. So I bought a brand new house sitting on Lake LBJ, and the sun sets right over Pack Saddle Mountain right out my back door. Wow. I couldn't believe it. So now I've got this idea that Grace and I are going to travel and go to meetings, and we're just going to have the best time, and I'm close to the kids, and, you know, everything's just so great. Except I did something that wasn't wise. I didn't know it at the time. But I invested all that money with somebody that wasn't trustworthy. So I move back to Texas. I buy a new home. I don't pay for the home, so I still have house payments. And I call up to Virginia, and I ask Bruce to please send my money down to Marble Falls, Texas. And he says, you got it. And the check never came. And then when it came, it bounced. There was no money. Bruce stole almost $350,000. It was like another death in the family. And I am so grateful to Open AA Meetings because you told me to pray for Bruce. That's a good thing. I pray for Bruce and his family this day, every day. God bless Bruce. It was just, I don't know how he could have done it. I don't understand that. I did press charges, and he went to prison for 2 years. That was the maximum the judge could give him. They did a paper trail. There's no money. It's all gone. So the only thing I know how to do is to teach school. And I am on my knees praying, God, what is your will for me? What do you want me to do? Tell me, please tell me. I'm going to go do it. If it's clean toilet bowls in a prison, I'm okay with that. Just tell me what you want me to do. I am scared. I don't know how. Maybe I don't get to keep this house. I don't know what I'm going to do. And you know what God did? He built a school 7 minutes from my house. And they needed a first grade teacher. So I start teaching school. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And then I get my first paycheck, and I open the paycheck, and it's not enough to make a house payment. And that's what I did. I started laughing. I laughed. I said, okay, God, I got a job. I did the footwork. You must be in charge of the money. And it must not be about money. You must want me to teach school. And that's what I'm doing. And I love it. And so I'm thinking, we're doing just really good, except I have this one little problem. I have a car that has over 100,000 miles on it, and sometimes when you drive it, it just kind of stops. And so you just kind of wait, and then it goes again. So Blanche and I had started, never lost contact, but we were talking a lot, and she said, what are you going to do about your car? I said, Blanche, you know, I've been taken care of. I'm going to be fine. She said, Stephanie, I'm going to enter some sweepstakes for you. How is that? I said, go right ahead, Blanche. So in October of the year 2000, Blanche had an accident, and she was in the hospital. And I would get in that little red car, and I would drive to Temple, Texas, which is about an hour and a half from my house. And I would get there, and I'd walk in, and she'd say, how's your car? And I go, Blanche, come on, let's just get you well. Let's just get you well. And Blanche did not survive her injuries. And her daughter called me, and she said, if you want to say goodbye to my mom, you better hurry. And I jumped in that little red car, and I said, God, I didn't get to say goodbye to Daddy, and I didn't get to say goodbye to Bill. I better be able to say goodbye to Blanche. And I was holding her hand when she took her last breath. And I said, Blanche, I hope you can see the lives that you have touched. They had a memorial service for Blanche, and they asked me if I would say a few words. And I'm at that service, and well, right before the service, my phone rings, and it's Laura. And she says, Mama, you're going to tell them how important Blanche was to our family, aren't you? And I said, Laura, you hated Blanche. She said, Mom, she wanted you to hold me accountable. She wanted you to not accept unacceptable behavior. And she wanted you to teach me that there were consequences for my choices. If it hadn't been for Blanche, I may not be alive today. So I could share that. Well, a few months go by and my phone rings and it's Blanche's daughter, Ellen. And she said, Stephanie, I don't know if you're going to understand this or not, but I had a visit from my mother last night. Okay? She's really worried about your transportation. Oh, my goodness gracious. And she said she wants you to have her car. And I said, oh, Ellen, I could not drive Blanche's car. And she says, then you're going to have to argue with God and my mother. Blanche was driving a 99 Cadillac. Had 23,000 miles on it, and it was all paid for. I'm driving that car today. It now has 136,000 miles on it. We're starting dinner sweepstakes. I'm just teasing. I'm not even worried. I know I'm going to be taken care of. My gosh, have you ever heard anybody be more cared for? I am cared for. There is a God that loves me and wants good in my life. And no matter what happens, He's there for me. Grace is almost 17 and I love her. Wesley gave me a granddaughter about 2.5 years ago. So I am just blessed all the way around. I am teaching school. Dawn is very present in my life. And she says to me repeatedly, are you in present time? The answer is always no. I'm worried about what I said yesterday. I'm worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. I even shared this morning, I think worry is a good bedfellow for me. When I go to bed, I get to worry and worry and worry and worry. But I'm getting better. I'm getting better. I just want to tell you that I believe today that God is big. He is enormous. And He wants good. You know, He must be so happy right this minute to be looking down and to see all of you willing to do it different, willing to accept something new and try it. Blanche told me one time that the greatest gift that you can give another person is to listen to them. That's the greatest sign of love, is to listen. I feel loved by you this evening, and I appreciate you letting me share. Thank you.